Yo, what up, everybody? This is Source from the Sofa. Another week, week three, as we were just reminded by Jason seconds ago. Just another random episode. Aaron even went above and beyond, maybe getting ready for the college football season, brought out a list of topics that we could talk about. We're not going to go through every one of them.
It's like games to watch. Remember, there's like 20 games, you can only watch 10. So it's I'm just getting warmed up.
Man, I'm games psyched. To watch.
I am psyched for week one college football games to watch. Like, I don't even know how many are going to be on that list, you know, this year.
You know what? I was doing a quick rundown. I don't know if there's a notepad big enough for week one college football. There's a lot of good games.
Whatever it is, we're going to be chasing whoever Hawaii's playing at on week one.
We'll see. We got the college football contest coming up, Westgate. We will be involved in that, so we will be signing up for that. So, yeah, start scouting, guys. Start putting together a list of games you like against the spread, and that's right around the corner here, man.
Yeah, we'll be gambling, doing some different stuff for year two. I'm excited. Should be pretty fun. Random weekend in sports. We got the Hungarian Grand Prix, which I was partying all late Saturday night at a friend's birthday party, and we were all still up at 6-7 in the morning, so I was like, perfect. They like F1, let's catch it. And
that was your Andrew guy or what?
Yeah, and I crashed in lap 40 something. Woke up and it was over. But it was a fun one to catch. We have some MLB trade deadline, I guess, if you guys want to talk about that. Some more gambling, some drama in the NFL. And I think that's about it, though. Nothing really sticks out on this list that you made for us, Aaron.
I don't know what you're talking about, Rome. We have the party of the summer, SummerSlam at MetLife Stadium. Two nights of wrestling.
I saw Halliburton was there, so it looks like he's doing okay.
Halliburton was there, right? He was part of the main event, man. He was helping out Cena, you know, gave him one of the crutches.
Wow. Yeah. Pretty cool. We'll do a SummerSlam recap then with you, Jason, a little bit. Why not? Let's kick off, though, with the Hungarian Grand Prix. That was this past Sunday. Norris took the victory. McLaren does it again, 1-2. And it was really tight finish. Norris keeping Piastri at bay. Piastri had, like, the new tires to kind of make some ground in the final laps. George Russell finished the podium. Pretty big gap between them two, overtaking Leclerc. And I can't remember if there was like any other drama sticking out. I feel like there was.
Yeah, there was a lot of drama. So you start with the McLarens. You know, the 1-2 McLaren finish probably is going to be from here on out as we go to the second half of the season. So I don't think we're going to see much of a change there.
Is that four straight races they've been 1-2, if I'm not mistaken?
I think you're right, Aaron. So, I mean, it's just a dominant car at this point. I think it probably might have been since the Canadian Grand Prix, trying to think back when George Russell won that race. But, yeah, the drama was there from the beginning before those two. But the biggest thing was them going on completely different strategies from a tire perspective.
Yeah.
And then making the call, you know, to bring Piastri in on a shorter pit cycle to start and basically committing to a two tire stop. Lando holds on, takes over the lead, commits to the one tire strategy, and that really gave him the victory. Oscar was able to make it interesting in the final like three laps. I think it was the second to last lap. He, you know, almost T-boned Norris going into turn one, but just. And it's kind of 2 weeks in a row right now that I don't want to say George Russell's got the favorable strategy, but there has been some, you know, I don't know the communication in the pit box. Is it going between the race engineer on each side on what they're going to do? Piastri's been ahead. He's been able to get the first preference on whatever the pit stop is, and so they've gone a certain strategy. But Norris and his team have basically gone, hey, we'll do the opposite and see what happens. Can something happen? And this one was like, hey, we're going to go on the one stop. They weren't the only ones to do that. You had Fernando Alonso, Gabriel Bartoletto, Lance Stroll, I think even Liam Lawson all went on a one-stop strategy. And, you know, those tires held on. I mean, they were putting in some pretty, you know, good laps. Piastri, again, was able to catch. But, I mean, it was drama because I think it's getting to that point between these two guys. And I don't know, at some point it's got to blow up between the two. And now you're talking about a title fight in the overall standings where we're down to, what are we down to, a 9-point margin between the two in the standings. So it's a victory, you know, who's getting more victories from here on out. And it goes into who qualifies better and maybe some of the strategy stuff that's inside the second half of the season. But it was interesting because I think there's a lot of feeling that Piastri's the better driver, but Norris has gotten some favorable stuff here the past couple weeks, which has been some conspiracy theories out there that McLaren secretly is favoring Norris.
Well, Jason, you've pointed that out since the season started that Zach Brown and is Norris's guy.
They were talking about that on the cast, actually, how Norris is his favorite driver. I thought that was really fun.
Yeah, there is. I mean, he obviously has been with him since he's been CEO of McLaren and you know, has developed Norris and who he has. Piastri, I mean, that was just a genius acquisition aspect from Zach Brown, because he basically stole him from Alpine. And I say stole, you know, he wasn't really under contract, but Alpine at the time for Piastri, Alpine had Fernando Alonso and Esteban Ocon, and they were going to go with that lineup and keep Piastri down in Formula 2, whatever. They lose Fernando Alonso to Aston Martin and said, okay, they just put an announcement that Piastri's our driver for the next year. And Piastri's like, I didn't sign anything. I'm not going to be your driver. And McLaren swooped in. And so while he was a young driver who, you know, went through Formula 2 and 3 and won championships and stuff and was heralded, he just hasn't been this guy that's come up through McLaren that's put the work in, where there's been a body language and thing, the way Zach Brown talks about Lando, where Andrea Stella, who's the team principal of McLaren, there's a lot of things that said like, oh, he's favoring Piastri because of just like his aggressiveness and the way he drives and stuff. So you got a dueling thing within the garage. Don't know if any of this crap is true, but like people read into this stuff as like, there's these two different ideas of who should be the number one driver, even though they all come out and say there's no number one driver, we're letting these guys race.
Well, two different personalities too. So I was just looking back. This is the fifth race out of the last six, 1-2 for McLaren, consecutive since Canadian. And then what was the one? They didn't do it in the Spanish, but they did it in Monaco. One thing I've noticed in the press clippings, especially like the post race interviews, Norris is just like a pretty chill guy. He's more like down about himself. He's very critical. He obviously overthinks a lot when he's racing, and maybe that's why he makes some mistakes, especially we saw earlier in the season. But other than that, though, he's a team guy. And now you're starting to see, at least to me, this almost like this irritance from Piastri, especially when he's getting interviewed post race. Like there's like a little bit of animosity, a little bit of hatred. Like he hates losing. Type of anger that's starting to come out. Before he was pretty dialed back, but we're starting to see a different side of Piastri on the main stage. I don't know if you guys are catching the same thing, but I've heard similar things, especially on the message boards.
Yeah, you're 100% right. You look back to the Silverstone race where he got with the penalty and was just complaining all over the radio. We talked about on the pod at that point where he's like, if you guys don't think this is a penalty, it's only fair that he gives me the position
back. Switch? So, yeah,
we get to switch. And so, and I think you've seen post-race stuff since then, and there's been a lot of awkwardness. That moment where Piastri has been, it's emotional, but it's negative emotion, where he was the guy that was just like, win or lose, he was just kind of like even. And there's almost like a robotic to him, similar to Verstappen, or it's just like there's no emotion high or low. You called it out for Lando. Yeah, Lando would get down on himself. He'd be overcome with the emotion of like, hey, I'm not being great, this and that. And you know, everyone's got these different personalities, and there's definitely a dynamic between those two. But I think Lando's been accountable, but at a certain point, like I think that emotion is seen on track too. Because if you look at some of these laps, I think particularly at Spa 2 weeks ago. Yeah, Rome's eating. If you guys are hearing that in the microphone, that just
he'll edit that part out.
Yeah, will he edit that out? I don't think he will. Just bag
AI mutes his ass when he eats.
He just came out like a pelican, just opened his mouth and just dropped the whole thing bag of chips in his mouth right now.
He's used to opening his mouth for many many things. So
hey,
comedy show's over. My bad. The comedy show's over.
Is that why you invited me to Vegas? You sick fuck.
Oh yeah, you guys together
in
Vegas.
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Remember.
But getting back on topic here, yeah,
these pretzels are making me thirsty.
Oh my god! Okay, Cosmo, got the reference. I see what you did there.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think you see from Lando in Spa, like as he was trying to catch up to Piastri in those later laps, and he made some mistakes on the track that cost him time, and the broadcast was talking about it. I think those are some of the differences in driving style that go into personality too, where like Piastri hunkers down and he hits his marks every single lap, like precision. Like again, similar to Verstappen. Norris hits some great laps and then he's on the edge so much that then he loses it and makes a mistake, loses second here and just couldn't make that delta. And so I think you see that there, but it's going to be close down the stretch. And if McLaren, how hands off are they going to be? Because they got the constructors in the bag. And when you talk to the teams, that's what they care about. That's what the money's at. You don't get money for the drivers' championship. The teams get money for the constructors. So they know they got all this money. These guys are going to be dueling it out. How are you going to let them? Because even the passive aggressive, guys on the radio to Piastri when he's almost T-bowing Norris going to turn one, he's like, Oscar, remember the way we race and da 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 da. Like, they're almost coaching these guys.
I missed that.
Oh yeah. I mean, they're on the radio trying to basically say like, okay, we race clean, this and that, and trying to go through. But like at a certain point, it's got to be like, hey, let's let the guys go. And what's going to happen? You're going to be winning the constructors. Like these guys need to battle it out. I know we can't do like Brad Pitt in Formula One and start taking each other's wings off and still putting around best laps. Damn, that's not going to happen. It. But I think there's got to be something that comes down to it where everything just can't be the qualifying and we just have some races out there. I think you're going to get some interesting tracks. I like the second half of the season, the North American part of the circuit where they're in Circuit of the Americas in Texas. They go down to Mexico. They go down to Brazil, Vegas. There's some really good tracks where a lot of different stuff could happen. So it'll be interesting, but that's the duel. I know there's some Formula One people thinking this is like a boring title fight this year, but I think it 2 years ago we had Max Verstappen run away with this thing where no one was winning a race that Red Bull won, 23 out of 24 races or 22 out of 23 races or whatever. Like these guys are winning back and forth and it's a duel between the two of these guys. There's other storylines going on for the other constructors and some future stuff, but this is a real championship fight between these two guys going down the stretch. And I think Formula One fans should, and the regular masses should be enjoying this.
Something's got to give.
Yeah, I mean, agree. I mean, I think it looks like these two are going to go down to the wire.
I think Piastri's is going to blow up eventually.
I think he already did. If you take a look at that 10-second penalty, which you guys were talking about, I mean, he was hot. I mean, to be as hot as he was and ask for the position back, I mean, I don't think it gets any more desperate.
It's
going to
happen more
in
the second half. But Norris is on a good one right now. He's gained some traction. If he didn't crash out on that one race, it would just be 1 point right now, right?
As a Canadian Grand Prix, it probably would be one. Yeah, I mean, his finished position. So it'll be interesting. And like, a crash goes either way. Because think about like Norris was out and didn't get the points that race. But then think back to we started the season in Australia. Australia where Piastri kind of saved it. I think he salvaged like seventh or eighth or something and got a few points out of it. So, that's the only thing you crash like. Is it detrimental where you are out of the race, which happens a lot in Formula One, or can you recover if these guys get a little too aggressive?
Yeah, I'm really excited to preview the second half. We're going to bring Andrew back for that one as well. He's already on board. He's at the lock in the date.
I want to talk one more thing, F1. We got to talk about Ferrari.
All right, do it.
So two things with Ferrari. One, Aaron put in the notes about my guy Lewis Hamilton just basically crashing out right now where he is just – he basically said, Ferrari, go get another driver.
Really?
Yeah, because he was out again early in qualifying while Charles Leclerc, his teammate, puts the Ferrari on the pole. He has just been dreadful in qualifying. He's done some pretty good stuff in the race, but even in this race, he did nothing. He was around 12th the entire time. Never could get anything. Hasn't felt comfortable in this car. I didn't think he was going to do great overall once you saw how bad this Ferrari got after China. But I want to bring that part up in China because remember, Lewis wins the sprint race in China. And then the actual race in China, both Charles and Lewis get disqualified because of the floor on the Ferrari being too low.
Remember that? Yeah.
Since then, the Ferrari's been crap. because I think it's been such on the edge that they've been messing with the floor and they've lost whatever aero stuff's been going on in the car. This race, Charles is in the lead, eventually loses it, but in the middle of the race is blowing up on his team with all sorts of like coded language of he's pissed off. That's all you know. And basically saying, you didn't let me try to fix it or do anything on there, but they're not trying to say it over the radio. George Russell in the post race basically said some about this car was wrong, the Ferrari, and there's something there that was questionably illegal. My guess is that, and this but not my guess, but the assumption around there is too, is they're messing with the floor again in the Ferrari, and I think it was bottoming out at a lot of certain points in this track, and there probably was a risk, depending on how Charles was pushing the car, that were they not going to pass inspection again. Because all of a sudden, he got super slow, lost the podium.
That was after lap 35, I think. He all of a sudden dropped a lot.
Yes, and so that's the conspiracy out there where George basically fueled that. Because they asked him a question. He's like, oh, they're not going to tell you they had an illegal car. But there had to have been something that was questionable there that Ferrari was super concerned about that they were going to get disqualified. So it's been drama with Ferrari from head to toe. I'm trying to put the American terms of this and where they would be, because I mean, they're basically kind of like the Yankees of Formula One, but at the same time, there's a level of drama with them that's almost like the Jets. We're just like, it's just complete dysfunction at all times. And they are like the national team of Italy. Like, if we talk about like what's the biggest thing in Italy, like, I'm sure they have like soccer stuff in there, but Ferrari is like what you know, like, Italy at. And there's such a pride within this team. And I think it's a different way this Formula One team is run. And it's a questionable success because Sebastian Vettel, four-time Formula One world champion for Red Bull, went to Ferrari, never was able to replicate the success. A lot of questions this is going to happen to Lewis Hamilton too, because it's just the infrastructure of Ferrari. But couldn't let that go before he jumped to the NFL Rome, because the Ferrari stuff was just like, what the hell is going on with this team right now? Because it just seems like something was up. And no one wanted to say it was up. But then George Russell comes out and says, yeah, they probably had almost an illegal car.
Yes, I remember.
But they passed inspection.
They did.
So I remember Leclerc backtracking on his comments that he made during the race. But then I did not catch Lewis Hamilton. So what did he say exactly afterwards?
Hamilton said after qualifying, because they basically asked, what's wrong? Are you not like comfortable? What's wrong with the car? He basically said, the car is fine. The car got on the pole. I don't know what's wrong with me. I think they just need to get another driver. And it's just like, it was a level of self-doubt for basically what I consider the greatest champion of all time when it comes to Formula One. He's just not confident in this car. He's never been confident in this regulation, even when he's at Mercedes. You know, we talked a lot about how big this car is. Like, it's the biggest a Formula One car has ever been. Like, the cars have gotten bigger and bigger to this point now that, you know, they barely fit in the streets of Monaco when they're racing. And I think everything about this regulation has never suited Lewis. The car gets smaller in 2026, and so maybe there's some upside there, but I think there's a level of doubt. Did he make the right decision with this? Because again, we're talking, and there's no facts to it, but everyone's saying Mercedes might be the car to beat with the new regulation and the engine and stuff. So he leaves Mercedes now to go into next year. If Ferrari doesn't have their act together, is it another crap box coming into the new regulation, which just puts them behind? And you know, Lewis crap is box. Getting up there in age. So
yeah,
he's like our age, right?
Yeah.
I mean, did Mercedes want Lewis back, or is this kind of like he just wanted to fulfill the dream of race Ferrari?
Lewis, he had one more year in his contract. It would have been this year. And I think what Mercedes would not give him a long-term deal. They were giving him the one-and-one stuff. And I think Toto Wolff eventually wanted Kimi Antonelli to be Lewis's replacement, which ended up happening, but I think it happened sooner rather than later. Because Lewis decided to go to Ferrari and kind of live this dream, which, you know, they'll talk about that's every racer's dream is to race for Ferrari. It's the team of Formula One. But I think it took everyone probably a year too early in surprise, but it worked out for Ferrari because Carlos Sainz was ending his contract.
Sweet, man. Well, thanks for that.
Sorry. No, you wanted to get to the NFL.
No, yeah.
You're talking about Brian Schottenheimer's backwards hat that Colin Cowherd is having.
Dude,
having a field
I saw
day
a
with.
Clip.
No, it's not a hat. It's a visor.
It's a visor. I was like, I don't know anyone else who wears a visor besides Jason. Maybe.
I used to wear a visor back in the day.
Backwards?
You know, when I was Never backwards, I don't think.
It's kind of weird, right?
It's not a good look, a visor backwards.
Who used to wear a visor backwards? I could have sworn there's like another coach with like the Chargers or something. I just can't pinpoint it.
Maybe.
You know? Do you remember?
I don't. Visors? I can't really remember visors.
I used to wear visors too. Are they coming back or?
I remember, you know, back in college, back in the day, you know, Steve Spurrier used to wear one at Florida, but you know, maybe back in the '80s, nineties, you had like what all those guys, John Robinson wearing a visor and stuff. But yeah, it's
I don't know if a visor ever goes away in football. I think that's just like a football look.
Yeah.
Anyways, there's like a lot of news. We can talk about the backwards thing. Colin's like, I don't think you got the memo. Serious coaches don't wear a visor backwards.
Listen, I've listened
coaches
to Colin.
Coaches and quarterbacks, that's what Colin's saying.
I've listened to Colin forever, and quarterback backwards hat is like his litmus test on
it is crazy.
Everything on profession. So
it is
crazy. There's one thing he's passionate about is how does the CEO of your organization wear a hat?
Yeah, he's a little anal about that. All right, NFL. Today they banned NFL's smelling salts. We just found out Red Zone is going to ESPN. How are they going to mess that up? We had a couple of trades. Mika Parsons, Jerry Jones not worried. So, all right, so they're going to eventually pay him then. But
I don't know. I saw Jerry came out today and said he wasn't even sure Mika Parsons was going to play in week one. Said he wasn't sure. So,
well, you know, they're not going to trade him to the Lions, right?
You know where he should be going, Rob.
He should not be going to the Bears at all.
100%
actually,
going to the Bears.
Actually, I think the Bears makes a lot of sense.
It's basically the Khalil Mack trade. We just get it done right now.
That's the package. Yeah, yeah. Social media has not been really kind to Caleb Williams this past week.
They can get off of it, man.
It's been great.
They can show the video of him not hitting the targets in the net, and then there's another video where he drills like six in a row in the net. So, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I heard, you know, Caleb was playing basketball, not football, but we'll see. We'll see. We got week one coming around the corner.
Terry.
We just got deleted, though. It's never good.
And that's not good. You're right. It's not good.
Terry. Just don't release it. And then delete it. You know?
Why do they post it? Yeah, don't post it.
Yeah,
that's not a good look. Are they idiots?
No.
Bears gonna Bears. Terry with the Commanders. That contract drama. I've heard some pretty good arguments where they should just sign him and pay him. And then there's the other side where like, dude, he's already 31. Why would you commit that much money? The team's finally good. We got to do this smart. That's why they're not going to give him the contract.
Well, they're good because he's been playing at an elite
they're
level.
They're good, yeah, and they have a cool culture because he was
there.
They
need to pay him because I'm high on Washington this year, but I'm losing hope. So I get the guy paid.
The guy had like nothing but crap quarterbacks forever. They finally get him a good – and he produced with all his other crap quarterbacks.
Yeah,
and now you get him the good quarterback, and now you don't want to pay him.
That's weird. It's kind of weird. So you guys agree he should get paid.
Well, yeah, you got a quarterback on a rookie contract too. Your Super Bowl window's open right now if you're Washington.
I think he proved like through the years before Jaden Daniels, like he's a dependable
guy,
could be star receiver that you want on your team. That's going to be like
he was a top 10 wide receiver. What, Tyler Heinicke as his quarterback?
Yeah,
I mean, come on.
I was a Heinicke fan. Wasn't that bad.
These are the Chargers now, backup, so yeah.
Yeah. What else in the NFL? They got shot up.
Well, headquarters. Now the smelling salts, as it got banned.
Okay.
They're not shooting those up, but yeah.
Do you guys like the ban?
The smelling salts?
Yeah. Well,
I don't know. I always like seeing the players come out of the commercial, like smelling them and just throwing them off to the side, like as we get ready to play. So I don't know.
I guess the ammonia rationale.
Oh, okay.
I guess it's tied to masking concussions.
Yeah. Or can be tied to that. Yeah. Yeah. So that's the negative side effect, I guess. And there's supposedly no positive or shown results that it actually increases, like, you know, energy and alertness and all that, but.
It wakes you up.
Yeah, it does. It does wake you up.
Let me tell you,
It wakes you up. That's why, you know, guys get knocked out. Remember the old days, the old movies, and give them the old smelling salt and come too.
That's hilarious. I
was trying to think, was it Any Given Sunday when they did that?
Yeah.
No. Yeah, I think so. I'm not really prepared to talk a lot about football. That's all I got.
I mean, that's really it. I mean, yeah. we did have the Hall of Fame, the preseason game where the Lions looked bad.
They looked bad, and
I think there's a lot of concern
really good
for sure.
Who did you get the Chargers? Yeah, Lance. Balling
out. Well, he's going against second and third string guys, but
there's a stat, man. Like in the last 10 years, everyone who's won the Hall of Fame game has not made the playoffs.
That's going to change. I can tell you that right now.
Just saying. It's there. All right, let's transition then.
Well, I think you could pseudo-transition if you're going NFL. You can talk about just the NFL Network, ESPN, Red Zone, what that's going to look like.
And what NFL Network's fantasy football coverage, too. I think ESPN now has it under one umbrella.
I thought ESPN already had their own NFL fantasy football coverage.
Yeah, but now they're taking the NFL Network's ones, too.
Sounds like the ESPN is just buying everyone else's good shows.
Yeah, I think Jason mentioned that about a month ago, right?
Now it's just going to be cable for all the sports shows. You just have
ESPN. They've got that new streaming thing they're coming out in the fall. It's going to cost like $30 a month.
It's still coming out.
You get everything ESPN, like all their networks, everything tied to basically whatever it is, their streaming service platform for like $29.99.
And it probably motivates this. Before the podcast started, we were talking about Rich Eisen and where he was at. And like that was part of the biggest thing for Rich Eisen was him being on the ESPN. I don't know what we're calling it, but it's not ESPN Plus. But
Mega Network.
ESPN everything. But I'm sure you get tied in at this point. Now you get this ESPN subscription. You get the NFL Network with it now, too, along with ESPN3, ESPN The Ocho, ESPNU.
I think any program that ESPN has, you get it with that streaming service. So it will be separate from ESPN Plus, but yeah.
Well, how's that going to affect like YouTube subscribers? Because we already get NFL Network.
I think you still get it. Like it's a different way that I think ESPN has been holding off when you look from a revenue standpoint. Because right now, you know, they get the contract from YouTube TV or DirecTV or Spectrum, whatever cable providers are providing the ESPN content, whatever package, hundreds of millions or whatever they're paying. And they've avoided their direct to consumer stuff because it probably was like, okay, we'll lose money in negotiating power with these third party companies and everything like that, but now you're to the point where, okay, ESPN's like, all right, what is the money that comes direct to me that we're not negotiating with the middleman where I charge you $30-$35 straight profit going to ESPN for that content? And what's the appetite for that? Rome, you brought it up about a month ago on how many different streaming services you would need to have to
have a bit about my stand-up act. It's ridiculous.
There you go. I mean, so what it's like to be for every NFL game and like where it's on from a cable perspective. But now, I mean, this gives ESPN to the point where they cut off the middleman to cable like it would have been. So it's interesting. They try to do this with, I guess it's Turner Sports or Warner Brothers Discovery, whatever portion of that company. They were trying to make that kind of sports only channel that was bringing Fox, ESPN, and Warner Brothers all into like a sports streaming like network, and that was basically called off because people were suing them for whatever monopolistic stuff or whatever practices. But I mean, I think this gives ESPN with acquiring the NFL Network the tie-ins with the NFL. I think there's naturally going to be some questionable journalism aspects of it if you're into that, because now NFL owns 10% equity stake in ESPN. So when you talk about like what's the type of journalistic integrity you're going to get of ESPN covering the NFL since the NFL is a partial owner of what's going on the airwaves. But I think ESPN's kind of long gone of trying to be the leader in journalism that they probably were 20 years ago where they were hiring writers. Now, okay, we're talking about, we pay the most money to get the games, whether it's college or, the NBA or the NFL, and we talk about the NFL. That's the coverage. And then we buy personalities that have less overhead. Like you said, they bought McAfee, They buy Rich Eisen. These are ready-made shows. They just pay one number. They don't do all the overhead that it requires a production company does.
I like the Eisen show because he does and football. They got, he does they everything got, they got, well.
You know, inside the NBA with TNT, so.
Inside the NBA?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's a strategy because, I mean, does it save them money where they're just buying whatever? They don't need to worry about whatever when it comes to the different parts of this. Like, hey, we just buy this show. We put it on our network. Remind me, you talk like Rich Eisen. I really like Rich Eisen, too. Want to bring that out when we get to the SummerSlam segment. There's a little tie-in with Rich Eisen and SummerSlam I got to get to. But
yeah, I mean, I think, like Jason just said, I mean, journalism for ESPN, they don't care. They're going back to being the entertainment sports capital and entertainment, and that's what they're going to do. They're going to buy all the entertainment from sports, all the big guys, and pin them under one umbrella, and here you go. For $30 a month, you can see us.
I'm very curious on, I didn't read enough into it. Does the Red Zone channel, is it going to be on ESPN? Is it going to be like we, you know, here on the West Coast at 10 a.m. once NFL Sunday Countdown goes down, it goes straight to like a bowling or darts or some other crap on ESPN. And I got to flip over to like CBS or Fox for, you know, the games. But now, hey, are they going Sunday, you know, Countdown straight into the Red Zone channel on ESPN? You know, that turns into something like great for ESPN if they're able to do that. I don't know where it kills it with just being an overall channel on, you know, the like YouTube TV for us.
Yeah, I mean, DirecTV still had the Red Zone channel, so I don't know what that's gonna look like here.
Yeah,
no clue, but we're gonna find out. It's like weeks out.
Yeah,
weeks out. What do you got to talk about the MLB trade?
I mean, there were so many trades. There were
a lot of trades.
Break it down.
I thought we were going to take a break and then come back. And
I want SummerSlam to get its own thing.
Wow, SummerSlam, high praise, its own segment, Aaron. That's where it's at, man.
Wow, I need a break after hearing that. I'm not even going to lie.
Jeez. Well, I mean, teams. So, are we doing MLB, Rome? Is that where you're going?
Let's
you're
do it. Yeah, let's roll into it real quick.
Okay, all right. Rome says, I would say, Aaron. I mean, I don't know if you disagree with this. The most interesting one I found in the American League being kind of wide open, the Seattle Mariners, who've never really made their World Series run, they got a sneaky good team right now that could make a run
really
in the American League.
Really good team.
And them getting my guy Suarez from the Diamondbacks that nuked my fantasy baseball team here, losing all my power. But I think adding him, you know, to that lineup that's already got the big dumper, Julio Rodriguez, you know, a bunch of other, you know, good power bats for that
lineup.
Don't
forget they added Naylor basically about a week before.
Nah, Naylor, yeah, I forgot about that too. I forgot they just got the whole Diamondbacks team.
Yeah.
So, that was an interesting one to me because I think the Mariners have been a team that they're pretty well ran. They got a good farm system. They brought some good guys up. You know, they invested early in Julio Rodriguez, even though it kind of hasn't panned out. They were using kind of like that Braves model where, hey, we got a star. We'll pay him. We'll have years of control. We'll give him the money now. Cal Raleigh's been arguably maybe the AL MVP. He's probably going toe-to-toe with Judge for that right now. Judge came back tonight, I believe. But there's something there in Seattle. And it's you know, for a team that's never been to the World Series, I think, right? They definitely haven't won it, but I don't think they've ever been to the World Series, Aaron.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they just got to the postseason for the first time in, like, what it was, like, almost 18, 20 years when they got back in, I believe it was 2022 season, 23, whatever it was. I mean, when we did our MLB preview, our second half preview post-All-Star game, I came on and I said, look, it's Seattle's kind of always faltered because they lacked offense. And then they go out, they get Suarez, Jason's guy, Naylor like 5 days before. I really like the Seattle team. In fact, I got them right now as my number one team to win the – I like them to win the American League. I think Seattle is going to win the American League right now if they stay healthy and get to the World Series. I think they're a sneaky sleeper team to do it. And I like them. I really like what Seattle's doing.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think the Astros still got something there. I was very curious of the Astros getting Carlos Correa. The Twins basically have just thrown the whole thing overboard.
What were the Twins doing? I mean, they got rid of basically a third of their team.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, as a White Sox fan, I'm eager because right now, basically, I think the AL Central after the Tigers now is kind of wide open here going into 2026. But yeah, the Twins throwing everything overboard. The Correa thing to the Astros, interesting depth piece for them. You know, putting Correa at third base, where you know he was part of those teams to the World Series for a long time. Hasn't had the greatest season, but I think it's a big piece for the Astros to add to their lineup and to get something back. They've been, you know, they've been kind of just owning that AL West here for a while. The Rangers lingering around a little bit, but. I don't want to disagree with Aaron on this, man, because the Mariners, they were the first thing that popped in my head. The other ones that popped in my head, honestly, if we flip to the National League, I don't know how many prospects the Padres got. It seems like they have a never-ending amount. They've traded, like, I think 50, like, top 100 prospects, but they went out and just got everyone they possibly could, too. They just went and got one of the best closers of the American League from the A's, and they already have a good closer.
That one didn't make any sense to me. That was weird.
It doesn't make sense from a regular season perspective, but when you look at playoffs, Rome, bullpens play a big part, and the Padres got the best bullpen right now. I mean, they already had probably the best setup guy in Adams. They got Suarez, who leads the league in saves. They just brought over Miller, who's a top closer.
Yeah, but why bring him in if they already got their guys?
Well, you don't need him for saves. I mean, we've talked about starting pitching. I mean, if you can get five, I mean, Dylan Cease is only good for five innings, but he's really good for five innings. So then you bring in a bullpen arm that's for the sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth that are basically lights out, probably combined earned run average below two between all those guys. And you look at the lineup they're going to be going against, Dodgers and all those teams, Phillies, you got to have back end bullpen pitching. I like what the Padres did. Like Jason said, I don't know. They traded the number three prospect in baseball. That's a lot to give up for a guy that they already have a closer. I mean, I'm hearing rumors they might make him a starting pitcher next year because the Padres just kind of have taken relievers in the past and done that. And given where the Dodgers are at, how they've been playing bad, they've been hurt. I mean, the NL's open. Anybody can really win it. I mean, the Mets.
Giants became sellers.
Phillies. Giants have kind of fallen out. Cardinals are sellers too. I agree. I think I like what the Padres did. I like all the moves they made. Plus bringing in the catcher, two outfielders. They brought in a lot.
Ramon Laureano and Ryan O'Hearn from the Orioles. I think that was some two bats they needed. And then, you know, I think just to add another outfield, you know, death piece for them. Again, they gave up like five, six prospects for those two guys, but I think it was one that say the Padres are in. Like, we are trying to win this. We think we are competitive with the Dodgers. We're gonna give every piece possible. They got Nelson Cortez from the Brewers as well too. So adding more depth to the starting pitching. They got Michael King, who is great in the first like 6-8 weeks of the year. Got hurt. He's gonna be coming back here down the stretch. I think there's a lot to like about the Padres, but again, it's going to come down to a 7-game series against the Dodgers at some point in the playoffs. But it's funny. I think we gave you a hard time, Rome, about the Dodgers the entire offseason about buying the sport. But then we get down to it and we got 2 months left in the season and they only got a 3-game lead on the Padres in the West. And the Brewers are the best team in the National League, best team in baseball right now.
I haven't even looked at the complete standing. That's crazy.
Yeah, Brewers are hot. I mean, Brewers are hot. They have not had a good postseason success. But, yeah, I mean, Rome, you kind of called me crazy when I said the Dodgers weren't going to finish with the best record in the National League when the season finished. I still believe they're not. Phillies, they added a great – they probably added the best bullpen arm coming over from the Twins and the closer. Mets added bullpen depth. The Dodgers really didn't add anything. A few utility guys. And then the Cubs really, they didn't do anything either. I mean, the Cubs were really kind of quiet. They've been struggling a bit down the stretch here.
Cubs getting ripped by local Chicago media. Just absolutely destroyed.
Yeah, I was watching the game earlier today. They got rocked in that seventh inning.
They got rocked, and then their big acquisition was a guy that the White Sox gave up on last year in Mike Soroka.
Who just went out.
Got hurt.
Soroka was hyped up by the Braves like 6 years ago, and we saw how that turned out. He went to the Nationals, to the White Sox. He's been bouncing around from bullpen arm to a starter. Yeah, I'm worried about the Cubs for sure. The Reds have been playing pretty good baseball too, but I just don't know if they're going to have enough to catch these other teams. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, they. I mean, they added like some utility guys and stuff like that. But I agree. I think a tough road for the Reds. But I don't know, man. The Cubs may be giving it back to him at a certain point, but it's a tough thing. The Giants, interesting. Just, you know, they kind of waved. They traded their closer.
That was weird.
I actually like that move because I have Randy Rodriguez, so I'm happy with that.
Well, I hate that move because he was my closer in a fantasy league.
Yeah. So. You could have traded for Rodriguez. He was on the market. I would have given him up.
Yeah,
cost you somebody.
Guys, a used car salesman, man.
All these guys, Aaron's in a league of used car salesmen, man. These guys,
I believe it.
You got to learn. Trades. You got to learn.
I fucking believe it.
You got to learn. Yeah, I mean, what else we got? I mean, Giants, yeah, they've since the All-Star break, they've not played well. Cardinals were sellers. Marlins, surprised they didn't give out more guys. But also, you got to, you know, Baltimore was a big seller, too, because they even gave up Cedric Mullins to the Mets. So I like what the big teams did in the National League. If you're talking about Phillies, Mets, Padres, they all made big moves. The Brewers kind of stood put with what they got. Same with the Dodgers. I believe those are probably your five best teams right now in the National League, and the Cubs are kind of faltering. We'll see if they can hold on and get into that wild card.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, let's take a quick break. Ladies and gentlemen, here is what y'all been waiting for. Ah, fuck, I was going to do an intro. I'm just like so tired.
Like, wait a minute, we got Bruce Buffer here? Or what's going on?
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world, time for SummerSlam recap from Jason. That's all I got.
That's all you got? A lot of energies. A lot of energy.
Yeah. And then I crash. Yeah, so SummerSlam, a lot of people making noise about it. I was telling the guys off the air that I was falling into like these wrestling podcasts over the weekend. A lot of fat fucks. just talking about wrestling. I mean,
would you
tell.
Expect anything else?
I couldn't tell if it was inside a Waffle House or a Wendy's. But they were pretty passionate about a lot of things on wrestling. Got some cool clips. A lot of Aussie dedications. Some weird Hogan dedications. But as you know, SummerSlam is like one of the bigger events. I saw some clips, at least like some highlights. Halliburton's crutch being taken away. Pretty big main event. I did see it on Peacock. I thought about watching it in the background. But I watched Sinners instead last night. So that's what I had to do. But Jason, man, give us the rundown on SummerSlam, the two-night event.
Well, I'll try to keep it down to just the main events room since you don't want me here for like, you know, a whole 2-3 hours. Just breaking down match by match of a great card. Two-night event, SummerSlam at MetLife Stadium in New York. WWE too big now, Rome. We can't just do the biggest party of the summer in one night. We got to do two nights, and we can't do it just inside of arena. We need to go to football stadiums for the big summer show. It is crazy what it is. I remember going to the Staples Center about a decade ago for like 3 years in a row for SummerSlam, and now what it's turned into is basically a second WrestleMania. Some say out there this was better than the WrestleMania I attended.
WrestleMania is going back to Vegas. They're doubling down on that again.
It is. They're doubling down on Vegas. I
assume you're going to be there, Jason.
I will not be there. WWE doing news. This. It's a pricey ticket, man. And you know, we just can only do so much. You know, I might need to sell my house in order to afford another weekend WrestleMania in Vegas.
I think you sold one of your cars to fund your baseball league. So.
I may have. Yeah. But anyways, Rome, we're getting into SummerSlam, two-night event, big main event in night one. Aaron watched it as well. You had world heavyweight champion Gunther, who's been one of the dominant champions in the past recent years. Rome, this guy's been in WWE for about, I don't know, 6-7 years right now. I can't remember exactly about big star on the European circuit. He went by the name Walter, which is just the most interesting, you know, European bad guy's name is Walter. But at certain points, he got the WWE name changeover. He turns into Gunther. Rome, he's been in WWE for 6-7 years. 80% of the time, this guy has been a champion. So nothing but championship gold around Gunther's waist.
Jason, I think I heard he's only lost like 4 fights in the 5 years he's been in WWE. They mentioned something like that. Is that
true? He's only lost to like 4 people or something like that, basically. Okay. Yeah, like about 4 matches. So unbelievable thing of dominance they've had. CM Punk was his challenger, former world champion himself, one of the most popular people in WWE and in the wrestling industry. His big return, we talked before in the podcast about him coming back, but this was a showdown. And if Rome, have you seen that WWE has a behind the scenes show on Netflix called WWE?
I just found this out when I was watching clips about them writing on who should fucking win.
Exactly. So very, very controversial in the wrestling circles about kind of getting the sneak peek behind the curtain. I have a lot of takes on that. We can save them.
Do you like
for
it?
I thought it was interesting, but what I'll tell you about this.
Like the writer's room is like, what? That's how the writer's room works in WWE?
It's wild. It gave me anxiety of my day job sitting in the room of a bunch of people and hearing people's opinions that I don't really want to listen to and how this stuff winds into storylines. But I will tell you, I can wait until you watch the actual show. If you ever do get to watch it, we can do a little review on it. I do like it, but I'll tell you.
Could one of you guys just add me to your Netflix accounts? Jesus Christ.
No, man. What do I got to do, man?
Roman, it's only $17.99 a month now, whatever it is.
It's everything $17.99.
Yeah, right.
I'm not adding another fucking platform.
Well, okay. Whenever you get around to it, what I'll say about it, Rome, is this is wrestling. And so you said this is a peek behind the curtain. This is another work. All right. They're working us in that show. We're doing method acting on method acting for the behind the scenes stuff. So they do show a lot of what behind the scenes and how it kind of works. But I don't even buy how much of some of this stuff was actually like legit conversation at the same time, too. But anyways, I bring that up because this was a match, Gunther versus CM Punk for the World Heavyweight title. On that board in the show, this was supposed to be the main event for WrestleMania for the world title, and they pivoted some of those plans and got to it now. And it was a great match. It was a little controversial, I'll say, in the wrestling circles. And I say controversial, there's some wrestling quote unquote journalists and opinion makers out there that may have said this was a terrible match and it was atrocious. And there's others that, man, this was an old school wrestling match. A lot of good holds, getting the crowd into, ended with a bloody finish. We had Gunther going under the table, blading himself for a bloody finish. The cocky heel beating the hell out of CM Punk for an entire match and end up losing. But Rome, that was not the story of the match, because as great of a match as it was, the biggest news of the match. Do you know what the Money in the Bank briefcase gets you, Rome, in the world of WWE?
What does it get me?
It gets you a title shot anytime, anywhere. And so the current holder of the Money in the Bank briefcase, Seth Rollins, won that a couple months ago. About 3-4 weeks ago at Saturday Night Main Event, we talked about that, Goldberg's retirement pay-per-view. Seth got hurt, and everything's saying behind the
scenes. Was it real?
Well, that's what it was, Rome, because it was reported as, hey, this is real. And when the event happened,
he went on the Rich Eisen show.
He went on the Rich Eisen show, which is why I bring Rich Eisen up earlier.
Oh my God. You are good.
I'm good.
You're good, Jason.
Tying it back, all right? He hosted the Rich Eisen show for 2 days, goes there with crutches, a knee brace. He tells everyone, there's a guy in the Rich Eisen show that's a big wrestling fan, has his own wrestling podcast show with O'Shea Jackson, Ice Cube's son. All right. Seth opens the show 3 days after Saturday Night's main event that he's hosting it. Says, I went to Birmingham, Alabama to Dr. James Andrews, who fix everything. There's too much swelling. We got to wait till it comes down and get more opinions. I don't know the status of my knee. We're going to see what's going on. They got to get back in there. His wife, who's the women's intercontinental champion, Becky Lynch, posts a video of him with his daughter with a crutch and knee brace going down the street. Ron, this would be like you with your daughter, just posting videos. He's got a knee brace, all right? So he's working everybody, all right? So we don't know if this is real or is fake. So fast forward to SummerSlam. CM Punk wins the world title. Big redemption story. Comes back to WWE, has had some memorable feuds and matches, wins the world title. His first time in more than 10 years being out the company, wins the title. Immediately, Seth Rollins' music hits for him. He comes out with a big-ass knee brace on his knee, crutches, hobbling through. He's got the Oracle, the Wise Man, the Advocate, Paul Heyman, the greatest manager in wrestling history with them, with the Money in the Bank briefcase, Rollins stares him down. He's got these crutches. Well, Heyman holds up the briefcase. Rollins turns around, and I'm going to send you this gift from him. It's going to be a top five gift. It's already making its way on the internet. You've probably seen it already. Rollins turns his back to the ring. He goes to the thing, puts his arms out, drops the crutches, turns around, takes the knee brace up, grabs the briefcase from Heyman, goes into the ring, beats the hell out of CM Punk with the briefcase, gives the briefcase to the referee, cashes in, wins the world title. Hell of a swerve to go off the air. Rollins went back on Rich Eisen on Monday, basically saying, yeah, he worked everybody. And so this is where I'm going to get into this, Rome, the wrestling media out there.
Some of the clips. I did not see that.
You didn't see that? Okay, I'll get you the cashing clip.
Yeah, you got Peacock there, right, Rome?
Yeah, it is.
It's funner when you get clips on Instagram. Okay.
I'll send you some clips on there. I'll tell you, we want some takes here on the show, right? And we won't talk a ton about wrestling media. We talk about sports media, but wrestling media. Are you familiar with Dave Meltzer, Rome?
The name sounds familiar.
Dave Meltzer is basically like the longest wrestling, quote unquote, journalist that's been around forever. He had the Wrestling Observer. They call him in wrestling the Dirt Sheets, and basically kind of like a little newspaper. Been around forever, knows a ton about wrestling, knows more than probably anyone forgot. But Dave's been under attack by the internet recently in the past couple years because he loves WWE's competition, AEW. Can't get enough of it. And always craps on WWE here and there. One thing Dave really caught me off guard was he didn't like the cash-in from Rollins, and he really didn't like that they basically were working the other wrestlers, that they were being untruthful with the other wrestlers of faking this injury, because he reported shortly after that the injury wasn't real, but people didn't know. And so Rollins basically made this. He didn't tell anybody what this was, and people thought he was legitimately hurt. And so Meltzer goes on basically saying, like, this is going to create distrust in the locker room and this and that. My thing, Rome, the reason you have to go to these lengths is because you got people behind the scenes in WWE that can't keep their mouth shut. And they go tell guys like Meltzer and these other things, all this stuff. So he's worried probably about his sources, because I tell you, in the day-to-day work, when you get confidential information about your workplace and you disclose it to people outside your workplace, you get fired for that. And so while he's saying it's creating mistrust with the wrestlers, you can't tell a bunch of these guys anything. That's the reason they have to go in such lengths to hide anything from the audience to create these genuine surprises, because no one can keep their mouth shut backstage.
And so like the Luka trade.
100%. The lengths they had to go to keep that. And so I found that a hilarious take of the creating mistrust, because if you work in a business or a workplace, you are entitled to confidential information that you need to keep to yourself or you lose your job. And they don't have that so much in wrestling. But in order to keep the fans and the interest in what that was, I thought it was amazing storyline and swerve. I'm a big Seth Rollins fan, and I think that was a great way to end night one. It was trending all over the internet.
So I heard, like, is this true about, like, the beef with Rollins and CM Punk? Like, Rollins trained CM Punk, and now CM Punk just acts like a punk, just really entitled. And so Seth Rollins had, like, this animosity against him. Or is that part, like, all, like, the skit?
It's interesting because you don't know. I'll be 100% honest. If you watch WWE Unreal, I think Seth Rollins is one of the best at not ever really disclosing maybe what he really thinks of a lot of people. Because when Cody Rhodes came back to WWE and basically was positioned as the big star, and Seth's been around, he's been the workhorse of WWE since 2015, give or take. Him and Roman Reigns are the stars of this generation. And Cody comes back and basically given the green light. Rollins said a lot of things publicly and not on TV about his dislike for Cody, what he had left WWE and came back. But when you get behind the scenes after those guys have an epic feud, you know there's a general admiration and respect for each other. And there's some things that that Rollins said while CM Punk was gone, and probably some legit stuff that was heat there. But back, if you look at WWE Unreal, they actually have a behind the scenes kind of moment of them putting together the Elimination Chamber match, and you see Rollins and Punk putting this thing together. And so there could be legit stuff between them, but I think a lot of this is played up and what they do to hide. I don't think maybe they're the best of friends of anything, because there is a backstory that a young Seth Rollins wanted CM Punk to train him for free when he's a struggling wrestler when he's like 16, 17. But I think at this point, they've had an epic feud. It's been a storyline basically since Punk has came back. And if it is real, okay, these guys put their business aside and they do things right. But if it's not, and they're just kind of friends, they really work everybody.
Yeah, there might be some truth to that. But yeah, like you said, I mean, for wrestling to work, both guys have to be in on the script and make it work. You can't just be like, hey, I hate you, I'm going to go off script. I mean, wrestling, that's what makes it great, is everybody's on the same page. It's a soap opera of men wrestling and fighting. And you know what's going to happen. You know what moves are coming. And like Jason said, I mean, the story gets it going. And if there is feud there behind the scenes, you got to basically put it on the back burner and make things work. And that's how you get the show, right? I mean, and if that's just an added bonus, hey, it's an added bonus. But yeah, I like that main event fight. I mean, CM Punk getting the win. And then Seth Rollins, I mean, I didn't know the whole story. I just saw him come out, crutches. I'm like, okay, like, this dude's pretty, looks like he's pretty jacked up. And then all of a sudden, dropped the crutches, took off the knee brace, came running in, just beat the living hell out of CM Punk with about 10 shots of the briefcase right to the head. Gave it to the referee, and the referee yells, he's cashing in, he's cashing in. And then, boom, he does his finishing move. 1, 2, 3, pinfall. New champ, Seth Rollins.
Rome, nice. That was just Saturday. We still got Sunday.
That was just
to
Saturday.
Go. Yeah, what Saturday. Sunday?
Wait, there was something that happened Sunday. Who came back?
Well, we don't want to get into that yet. We'll get into that because that's the spoiler of Sunday. There was some great stuff that happened on Sunday. There was a great women's title match. There was a pretty good intercontinental title match with Dominic Mysterio, the son of Rey Mysterio, and AJ Styles. But the main event,
I did see that, the old boot trick.
The old boot trick was a good one. That was a good one, man. Just like his kayfabe real dad, Eddie Guerrero, tying back to things. But main event night 2. We'll skip the whole show. Don't want to keep you up, here in a, 3-hour segment here about WrestleMania, or about SummerSlam, excuse me.
Because I'm not gonna let it go.
I'm not gonna let it go, Rome. You're trying to cut my time, but we don't need to go match by match. We'll go straight to the main event here, Rome. So Cody Rhodes, the American Nightmare, former WWE champion, lost the title at WrestleMania after a year title run, after he finished the story at WrestleMania 40, versus John Cena as the current WWE champion coming in. Cena won the title at Mania in a controversial fashion with Travis Scott interfering. A lot of passionate takes on that, since we haven't seen Travis Scott since. And to be honest, an alleged falling out between WWE and Travis Scott as well has also been talked about. So probably won't see him on TV. But Rome, we talked about it at the WrestleMania buildup, was John Cena turning heel, going bad guy. That happened at the Elimination Chamber. Was a pretty epic moment in wrestling history with The Rock, Cena, Travis Scott beating the hell out of Cody Rhodes. It was awesome. It was trending everywhere. But the follow-up on this Cena heel run has not been the greatest. There were some good moments. People are going to tell you it was all bad. It wasn't. There were some good moments. But at the end of the day, there was a lot of things that Cena did as a heel that just wasn't believable. The guy's not overly believable as a bad guy. And I would say just didn't go far enough. Didn't change the music. Didn't change the wardrobe. They're selling last time because on his final retirement tour in every town, whatever local sports team, the t-shirts in those colors. Like I said, same music. He's just got a frown and he's insulting some people. And he puts the Titantron black and white, which was killer, by the way. Love that at Mania. He comes out and there's no color. It's just black and white. It was a great contrast. But you didn't get the classic stuff of a heel where the music changes. He comes out in a suit, isn't trying to sell merch. And so there was kind of like a one toe in, one toe out kind of at this heel turn that was never quite sitting right with the audience. And then The Rock being so heavily involved in the turn and then just disappearing since, like, what was the story? There just wasn't a story about it. And Cena basically said, I'm trying to ruin wrestling. I'm walking away with the title. It just wasn't hitting the audiences. So they made a pivot on the SmackDown prior to the SummerSlam. Cena basically said, you know, I did something that somebody talked me into to get attention, and all those guys left. Just left me here alone, which they did. Haven't seen The Rock, haven't seen Travis Scott, no follow-up. And he was basically kind of forced into this title fight with Cody Rhodes. And he basically said, no, he's coming out. So, good moment. Cena's music hits. The black and white Titantron's up. Then it flips to the colors. Cena comes out running like usual. Talks to his cameraman, Bruce. Runs down to the ring. Does the whole shtick. And then Cena and Rhodes, for my money, put on, hey, this is probably Cena's best match in 10 years. Like, if you use the old Dave Meltzer stars, this is a 5-star match, like top to bottom. Just had the crowd every which way. It was a babyface versus babyface match. There was some iconic like scenes, basically them coming to the elevator and the stage where Cody Rhodes was on Cena's shoulders and everything like that into his finishing move, the AA on the stage. There was some violence in it, but there was a lot of story, I think, involved. And it was kind of a passing of a torch match. And you really got to see, like, hey, this is the John Cena everyone wanted. And Cody Rhodes got the win. The title reign, John Cena's 17th world title reign, is over with. So now he holds the record, beating Ric Flair, 16-time world champion. He ends as a 17-time world champion. And now we got basically 12 more shows that John Cena will be on until he's officially retired, never coming back. And so you wonder, Cena's kind of doing this curtain call to the New York crowd. And then some music hits. And Aaron's whose music hit, Aaron? You text me right away.
Brock Lesnar, man. The Beast. I mean, I was watching it, and I'm like, Brock Lesnar?
Lesnar.
Has not been there. Last time he was seen was at SummerSlam 2 years ago, they mentioned. That's his event. He owns SummerSlam, is from what I kind of gather.
Well, I mentioned my SummerSlams going back at Staples Center. One of them was the infamous SummerSlam where he suplexed John Cena 18 times and basically squash matched Cena for the WWE title. It was, you know, one of those big moments.
18 times. Woo.
Yeah, just crushed him. Took the term Suplex City after the middle of it. He goes Suplex City, bitch, on this whole thing the entire time. But, Lesnar coming back. Huge surprise. Lesnar hadn't been seen in 2 years. And this is where the controversy of this appearance kind of comes, because Lesnar was named in the lawsuit against Vince McMahon and WWE for whether it's like sexual assault or sexual trafficking or something like that from the thing. Lesnar was named in this lawsuit 42 times is the number that's going around the internet. And so he was basically been put on the shelf because of this pending legal litigation against Vince McMahon and other people with WWE. And so him coming back was kind of a surprise to many, because this is still out there. This case isn't closed. And I think there's a lot of appetite for the explanation of why he's back. Now, I'll tell you why he's back, because as of yesterday, he had the first, second, and third top-selling T-shirt on WWEshop.com. So money is the reason he's back. It's a big opponent for Cena to come, as they are going to go to Paris here at the end of the month for a big stadium show in Paris. And so John Cena versus Brock Lesnar one last time in the stadium in Paris. It's going to be an insane crowd. The European crowds, frankly, are just better than the American crowds. The American crowds suck. I'm just going to say I'm part of that. I was at WrestleMania. The American crowds of wrestling suck. Europe and everywhere overseas blows us away.
Well, according to Rome, they're just a bunch of fat white guys just sitting around. So it makes sense.
That's
why they
probably
would suck.
The problem. No one's getting up in a chair and rooting there. In the European shows, man,
you're only getting up for some hot dog, a beer, and some peanuts. So there you go.
Sounds kind of good right now.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound bad, actually.
It was trending. Lesnar's return, and, you know, goes in the ring, F5 Cena, 75 million views or something on YouTube within the first like 48 hours or something crazy like that. And so both nights.
Is Lesnar basically Cena's number one nemesis? That's kind of like the buildup I got.
It's the buildup, but I think Cena's had different eras of different like nemesis. But when after Lesnar's great UFC run and he came back to wrestling, you know, was 2012, I'm going to put this at. I'm trying to think.
Have you seen his daughter?
Yes. Looks just like him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. But, yeah, well,
his wife, is he still married to Sable?
He is.
Okay.
Sable.
Yeah. That daughter is not, Sable is not her mom, though. That was from a previous marriage. But regardless, I'll say, yeah, a lot of controversy just talking through of Lesnar's involvement in that lawsuit and everything with WWE. But WWE got what they want. It was a huge moment. Got a lot of attention. Things were trending. It'll sell out the next show. I will say my criticism of WWE and the booking with this, it's exciting. I'm excited for Brock Lesnar to come back just as a fan of the sport. But they are very reliant on these kind of like pop swerve special moments at all these big events. And I don't know how many more they got left in them. What's going to be the surprise? And if you watch the WWE Unreal thing, I think that's the that's the thing you notice the most about that special is behind the scenes. Like, what can we just do to pop the audience here, swerve the audience there, where they're trying to be unpredictable. And I think that works to a moment, but sometimes I think they're just working themselves to a degree, which is, I think, is the risk of what's going on. They did it a little bit with the Jey Uso push to win the Royal Rumble and win the world title because of how hot he was with the crowd. But there were some things down that didn't make sense. And so I worry as they get into these events, like who the big names they can pull back to make a shock like Lesnar. There's not a lot of them. And you know, there's only so many things like the Seth Rollins stuff you could do before you really have to rely on like the star making stuff of these event, big events they're trying to do. Cause the rumor is they're doing more of these 2-night things. The Royal Rumble can go to 2 nights. They are doing SummerSlam next year in Minnesota, Brock Lesnar's hometown, as a 2-night SummerSlam as well. So a lot going on with WWE and wrestling right now, but set to be some.
So currently, what, WrestleMania and SummerSlam are the only 2-night events?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
And then Royal Rumble. So that makes sense. I mean, you'd have the women's Royal Rumble one night and some matches, and then the men's the following. So I could see that.
But, Ron, that was our I kept it, was only 25 minutes or so on wrestling.
Not rooms. Bad.
So you're 5 minutes over.
I'm so 5 minutes
over. Rome's going to have to suspend you for the next pod there.
$300, actually.
Well, we're getting to football season, and I probably won't get another wrestling shot here the rest of the year. So it's probably going to be the end of the season finale of the wrestling coverage. Sources from the
Sounds like the Paris events can be pretty big.
Yeah, Paris events should be pretty good, man. I do like the international crowd.
What weekend is that?
That is the 31st or something.
So that's basically when college football starts. F1's back. It's just a big weekend then, right?
Yeah,
Labor Day weekend.
That is Labor Day.
It is. Yeah,
Labor Day.
Monday,
yeah.
I think.
Monday. Wow, yeah. Fuck, there's a lot going on.
You might be right.
Oh wow!
Just kidding.
He's saying now.
Sorry, I got stuck. Like I was like Sable. I remember Sable, so I looked it up online, and then I saw like who she was married to previously, and that's another
Mark
rabbit
Mark
hole.
Marrow.
Yeah, crazy
Mark Marrow.
I didn't like him. Wasn't my favorite. What a fucking mustache that guy had! It's a great mustache. No, it's great, Matt. Thank you so much.
You're
good
welcome. I can feel your enthusiasm. Not as much as Aaron's when he just texts me Brock Lesnar, you know, Sunday night after the show. But
yeah, were you watching live, Aaron?
Yeah,
he was.
Yeah, nice.
Because yeah, I got the text.
What
right
was
there.
It on?
Peacock.
Peacock.
I was on Peacock because I was just chilling at home, so I just was flipping the channels.
So
like,
if you,
the
if
fuck
you
is
have
it
Peacock,
at?
It's on Peacock. If not, I believe you can order it still on pay per view or whatever, right?
I don't even know if you can anymore. I don't even think they have it on pay-per-view.
They do on DirecTV. They had at least WrestleMania and stuff. I don't know about SummerSlam, but I remember they had it like
pay-per-view. That's going to be something that doesn't exist anymore.
It was like $39.99 or $49.99. You could order it if you didn't have like Peacock or something. Like
which
an
is an insane
bites.
Thing to do. Like you get Peacock for like $12 a month and to spend
I think I get it free. I think I get Peacock for like $7.99 a month.
I think mine's free.
I used to, but then I paid for the commercial.
No commercials?
No commercial upgrades.
Yeah. The only time I
like
put on Peacock is for... They don't even show any. They only show like the first... Right when you start the event for wrestling, and then they never show another one for commercials.
Yeah,
so
that's fair.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
Yeah. During shows, it can be a little bit of pain in the ass if you're watching Peacock, but yeah.
I need to find a new show. I'm out of new shows.
There's plenty of great shows out there, Rome. We refer them to you all the time. You just generally don't have the streaming service or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, Netflix got a lot going on, Rome. But you got to pony up the $17.99.
Yeah.
Have you watched... I don't even remember what we've talked about, Rome, so we'll start from the... Have you watched The Bear?
I watched the first season.
That fits Rome. When I think of The Bear, I think of Rome.
No, yeah, you know, I worked in some of the best restaurants in the world, so it was kind of funny because I think I tried doing my own pop-up too. But I haven't got to season two or three. I heard it's good. I heard it's not good. It's kind of weird. I don't know. It's kind of like...
season one's really good. Season two is great. I think three and four, I'd put them down a little bit.
It's four seasons now?
Four seasons just came out.
This is the last one, right?
They are going to a fifth season.
Oh, but I just saw previews for the last one. I never watched it, but they were having like some kind of timer, like it was going to be the end of like his restaurant was closing.
You never
down
seen
or something.
It?
No, I never watched it.
Then what are you talking?
Because we're talking about it as a segment. I've seen the previews, man.
Yeah, that's a good one. I don't know if you have Apple TV Plus. I've said this before. I think Your Friends and Neighbors with John Hamm's a good show. Also, a golf show out there since we are a sports podcast. Stick with Owen Wilson, Mark Maron. Really good golf show.
Never heard of that one. Did watch Happy Gilmore too, though. I did
What's
watch
the other
that.
Show?
Stick
Before Stick.
Yeah, before Your Stick. Friends and Neighbors.
Yeah, Jason's talked about that one a lot.
Anything else?
Oh man, there's a bunch of stuff you probably didn't do from the beginning of the year, so you can just start with that.
Well, you did get him on. Yellowstone? Yeah.
I mean, there's the Yellowstone universe. You got 1883, 1923.
I can't find them.
They're on Paramount Plus.
I did have Paramount Plus. I can't find them.
Well, they're on there. It's like the Taylor Sheridan collection.
Do you have Paramount or do you have Paramount Plus? Because I think they're different, right?
You know, I'm just fucking sick of all these fucking subscriptions.
That's why there's ESPN, there's stuck. ESPN Plus, there's your ESPN everything like Jason just invented. So, yeah.
What's worse is like, you know, when I was dating that crazy broad last year, she logged out of my Hulu account, logged into hers, and then now I'm locked off of hers, but now I don't know how to log back into mine. It's just
can't you just log out and say retrieve password on your email account there, Rome?
Nah,
I believe that's how it works, right?
It's to my student email I don't have access to. To my one of my grad school emails. I've been to like six different grad schools, so it's just like,
well, how many emails are you using? Are you using these for like free previews and then like not paying, or what are you doing?
You're paying.
Amazon Prime is like $10 a year when you're on a grad school account, stuff like that. All right, never mind.
Yeah,
Prime.
No, you're still recording.
You mentioned Prime. You need to watch Jack Reacher.
Yeah, Reacher's good.
I'll, you know what? I do got to catch up. I still haven't caught up on all the Mission Impossibles.
If you're watching the Mission Impossible, you have Paramount. That's where the other Taylor Sheridan shows are at.
Hold on. Let's look it up here real quick.
This is Paramount. Captivating. This is captivating podcast audio right now. Rome trying to find a TV show on streaming service.
Don't you just type in 1823? Isn't that what the name of the show is?
1883 and 1920.
Okay, 1883. All right.
Paramount Plus.
But just the number, right? It's not like you have to type the name out.
You know, I didn't even know what it looked like, to be honest with you, so it's been a while.
Yeah, it's like a big mountain.
Yeah.
Bunch of stars around it.
The app logo for Paramount.
I've been locked out.
You can go to
there's Essentials and a Premium Plus. That's weird.
Listen, there is enough Taylor Sheridan content on there to keep you good that I recommend. Landman, I was talking about that last year. Lioness,
like
Lioness, another great show. You know, 1922, 1883, The Mayor of Kingstown.
Mayor of Kingstown's good.
If you want to go back a little bit, this was a Showtime show. I think it's on Paramount Plus now. Billions, love that show.
Oh, I love Billions.
Okay.
I didn't finish the last two seasons, though.
Hey.
Well, I was watching.
Okay. Well, there's a ton there for you, Rome.
All right.
There's plenty of shows, Rome. Any streaming thing's got shows, whether or not they're any good or not. There's plenty of entertainment out there.
That's true. That is
the
definitely
the new Happy Gilmore, though. You watched that, Aaron, huh?
I did watch Gilmore too, yeah.
Are we waiting for Rome to watch it to give an official review?
Well,
of
he doesn't have Netflix, so I think we might be waiting until this time next year, but, you know.
I'll get it.
I will say, I mean, I think, Jason, you mentioned that the audience was saying it's like the worst movie ever. Totally disagree with that. Not 100%. Even remotely close to the worst. Not even remotely close to the worst movie ever.
If anyone says it's the worst movie ever, they don't watch enough movies and realize how much dread. There's an Ice Cube movie that just came out, has a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Is that the War of Worlds or whatever it is? Okay. Yeah. I just seen him like all like up close. I'm like, I'm not watching that. I'm not watching it.
It's not even the worst Adam
I like Happy Gilmore too, though.
I actually
Happy Gilmore too.
I did too. I think it was completely overreaction by the people out there. And they were expecting something that I think it wasn't going to be. And I liked a little bit change the direction that it kind of did. I think it had a little, you know, some different heart to the movie. But again, this is an Adam Sandler movie, and so I think everyone needs to have their expectations of what an Adam Sandler movie typically is.
My favorite Adam Sandler movie is when he plays like some Jewish guy, and I can't remember the name of the movie. Like, is he New York?
You don't mess with the Zohan?
No, it wasn't that. I've never seen that.
No, never I know what that? You're talking about.
No. How? The movie looks pretty stupid.
It is stupid. That's what I'm saying.
It was really good though. It was on HBO. It was
what you're talking about.
It was phenomenal. I didn't know he had those acting chops. That and he plays like someone that's like he wears like a blue suit in that movie.
Punch Drunk Love.
Yeah, that was surprisingly pretty
deep. Uncut Gems. That's what you like.
Uncut Gems.
Yeah.
Uncut. That's a different type of movie there, right?
I didn't say that. Uncut Joms. Yeah, I would say there's some great dramatic roles out there.
No, I have
there.
Not seen that either, Aaron.
Uncut Gems, you haven't seen that?
No.
There's a good movie he did with Don Cheadle. I think it's called Rain Over Me, where he lost his wife in like 9/11.
Yeah, I couldn't get past the first couple of minutes of Uncut Gems. It just seemed unbelievable to me. I don't know. Am I tripping?
No, I didn't like it as much as they like. I think his performance was good in it, but I didn't like the movie overall. Like everyone was saying, "Oh, this is a great movie."
Dude, it's gonna bug me now. Nah, I'll be like another topic. We'll do an Adam Sandler pod one day.
It's a ton of great stuff.
All right, cool. I think that's gonna do it. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, we're into Wednesday morning now.
Wednesday morning, gotta love it. We'll jump back on the pod next Monday.
Yeah. We'll see.
I don't know.
We're asking you, Ron. When do you jump on?
Well,
you know,
we don't have a lot going on. We don't have any Formula One. We don't have any wrestling.
Yeah, I'm going to try to do some stand-up on Monday night, but we'll see how that goes. If not, I'll be coming back from SoCal.
What's your big stand-up date there, Rome? Mid-September at the function?
Possibly.
Where's the free tickets, man? The free booze. What's up, man? We get the invite or what? If you're gonna bomb out or what?
This is gonna be my first like surprisingly pro show, so I don't know. I don't know how that works yet.
You're going from the minors to the majors, huh?
I'm still in the. I shouldn't even be in the minors right now. I just.
You're like at.
Just picked up a mic and I got lucky.
You're at eight ball right now, man.
I got fucking lucky, so we'll see how it goes. Oh no. All right. Yeah, we'll do a pod next Monday then. And maybe. I got lost in my train of thought. Maybe.
Maybe. We'll see. Maybe Tuesday.
Monday or Tuesday.
Sometime next week.
Let's Tuesday and Wednesday night.
We've been consistent on the Tuesday night, but yeah.
Well, you got your daughter. Well, you're bringing your daughter. You're driving back up Monday, right? So it's likely Tuesday. Just stop that alone.
Here's the thing. Rome just misses football because during football season, he was a Swiss clock of when we were recording and just without football.
He misses the lines. There. That's what he misses. The lines.
Lines. Yeah.
The lines.
Yeah.
Not the ones that you people were thinking about, but he misses the lines, you know.
I mean, he might miss those too. I mean, we really, really don't know.
He was trying to weekend.
I think he dabbled in some this last weekend, but that's for the, Patreon network.
He was just trying to get through the Hungarian Grand Prix, you know, and just didn't, you know, just went straight into it.
Yeah, he felt like Lewis Hamilton when it was all said and done.
By the way, if you go to a party and they say they got food, two medium pizzas from Papa John's is not enough to feed 25 people,
food.
Guys.
Food, you got to have like fucking six appetizers.
You going to like a high school party? Or
that's
just
what it felt like.
Papa John's. What are you doing here?
Dude, all of it, like half the people were just like 24 to 26. I'm like, what the hell am I doing here?
And you don't like Papa John's anyways, Rome. I thought last time I kind of messed you up.
That shit fucked me up. Everything fucks me up, though. I just had a bag of munchies. They're Flaming Hot. It's my favorite bag of chips right now.
Yeah, we watched it. The podcast audience heard it.
Yeah.
No, that was Trader Joe's pretzel thins. They're really delicious. Not too salty, really light. But I ran out of hummus, though. Yeah, we need a food sponsor. Maybe I can get Taco Bell.
Rome just wants
to be Taco Bell.
He just wanted to be Brad Pitt in Ocean's 11, where he's just like eating the entire pod and everything like that.
Well, there was a point earlier in the year he was three or four consecutive pods just eating the whole time.
It was a good streak.
It was a good streak. All right, I'll do it. We'll be back next week. Thanks, guys.